listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 174 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me today is the one and only Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm kind of pulled in two directions. It's really beautiful in Maine here. You know, it's fall in New England, which is nice, and I played some really good shows over the weekend. But I've got some sort of family medical stuff going on, which is tugging on me a little bit too, as you know.
Well, that's a bummer. Sorry to hear that that's happening. And we are getting to that point, that stage in life where those things unfortunately start happening.
Time marches on.
It does. I am still feeling the buzz of the DIY Musician Conference that just wrapped two weekends ago. And that was an amazing event, I have to say, even though I had played a big part in pulling it off, and I know I'm biased.
Well, that buzz, that's supposed to last you until next year, right? It's you coast on that all year long.
All year long, yes, hopefully. But if you weren't able to attend the DIY Musician Conference, I highly, highly, highly recommend you come to Nashville next year. Plan for it. It's going to be August 25th through 27th. It's going to be right downtown in the heart of Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. It's going to be an amazing party-like vibe as opposed to Chicago, where we're kind of in the business district where we've been. This is going to be right where all the music venues are, and just so much music and energy in the town.
Which probably means that attendees need to really stock up on emergency and stay really hydrated.
Pace themselves,
right.
Yeah, so the one thing that I'm excited about that we were able to accomplish, I think, with year two of the conference is that from the beginning we've been wanting to make it different, make it something that's geared more towards artists, not a bunch of boring industry people just talking about the good old days, which I've seen a whole lot at conferences lately, like back when, you know, the business was real and we, you know, took all the rights from artists, we made lots of money, that kind of stuff. It's like, or people just doom and gloom or whatever. This conference feels very different. It's like 90% of the people that attend are artists, and there's the jam room is a huge hit. We talked about the jam room in our pre-conference thing. That was amazing to see. And we even had a jam room success story.
Oh, we did, because was it the person that ended up or the band that ended up in our Tom Jackson makeover?
Yeah, the band that was scheduled to do the Tom Jackson live band makeover canceled last second. And then we were scrambling around trying to find somebody, and the jam room had just opened up. And there were some folks, a band from Canada called Running Red Lights, that they just happened to be in there just playing around, and they were amazing, and we ended up picking them to ask them to do the live band makeover. They were great sports, and I think it ended up even being better than it would have been before. So we had some really cool stuff like that happen.
There were also jams going on in the hotel rooms, like, you know, upstairs and all over the place, and sort of impromptu concerts going on. It was great.
Yeah, and there was some really strong content. I felt like the content was really delivered this year. And not only that, I think it wasn't just a bunch of go do this stuff. It was, I think it had a lot of heart. It had a lot of emotion to it as well, because we're artists. We have feelings. Artists have feelings too. We like to feel inspired. And I felt like it had a healthy dose of that without going over the top, but really casting a vision for, you know, artists and finding success.
And I did, I honestly got a little choked up two different times during your speech, which was sort of the kickoff speech. And not just because I was like, oh, he's doing good.
like my mom would.
Yeah. No, it was like, one was you had a tearjerker moment for sure. But then also at the end, I was just getting kind of emotional because I was like, this is such a great kickoff. Like, it felt like you were coming, well, I know you were coming from a place of understanding what it's like to be an artist and, you know, like making the whole weekend be in service to the music, you know, which is the most important thing, and not kind of get lost in all the markety stuff we
Yeah.
You know, and focus on.
And that's what I liked about the conference. It had a good mix of that, that, you know, I feel like a lot of the content and information that people put out there for artists, a lot of it is great, but a lot of it is by people that have no idea what it's like to be an artist. And it's different. It's not just about, like, it's not marketing your music and a music career isn't just like marketing your coffee shop or marketing something. It's like, it has meaning and heart and stuff that's bigger than just, you know, the money. And so there was a lot of that. And I really felt like it just captured the essence of being a musician. It was just fun. Lots of community. It's hard to sell people on, come to this conference, because the community aspect is amazing. I mean, that's the last thing that'll get me to a conference personally, but it is. It's like everyone just is friendly and not in this weird way either. It's just like this really warm, welcoming environment, and cool.
I got added to a Facebook group at some point during the weekend, which was a group of people that had met that were going out to lunch each day to just kind of, you know, keep the conversation going and get to know one another. And I couldn't go on the lunch because I was preparing for one of our sessions, but that group still exists. It's still got, you know, I don't know, 30 people in it or something like that, that are continuing to talk 2 weeks later. They've started sharing their own music and, you know, sort of figuring out how they can help each other book gigs. And, you know, so that's just one tiny instance of what's happening everywhere at that conference.
Yeah, so really, really great event, and just the bringing the artist community together is a lot of fun. And when it's focused on the artist, as opposed to, hey, us industry people are going to tell you artists how you can get our attention, it's different. And I highly encourage you, start making your plans for next year. It's going to be hopefully even better. We've got some ideas that we've been, you know, trying things. We tried some things this year that went really well, and we're going to try and take it even further in a direction that's geared towards hands-on interactivity and learning and just being together in a really cool and fun way. And we're hoping to add a lot more performance opportunities. So be paying attention to that, because the sooner you get your tickets, which I believe they'll be on sale if they're not already, but there'll be some, you know, benchmark times that if you get a ticket by a certain date, you'll have first pick of the litter as far as getting selected for performance opportunities, because we're hoping to make it that just sort of that's the one thing that I think's been missing, and not a showcasey way, but more of just like, hey, let's have bands playing, let's have people playing, let's do a venue takeover and program it out. So be looking for that. It's going to be great. So I thought it was a huge success, and I appreciate all the podcast listeners that came out to the conference and came to our live taping that may not have actually taped.
Oh, man. Well, you just have to imagine that. It was totally amazing.
But it was so cool to meet a lot of you that have been listening to the podcast for years and hang out, and we'll keep doing that for next year as well. So, I was very pleased with how it all went down. We've got some great things to talk about. We've got some news, and then we're going to talk about 12 tips for a better band website, and then we've got a phone call to get to, so let's get to it.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 Music. News.
Amazon has finally announced their rumored music streaming service called Amazon Music Unlimited. We're excited to announce that if you're using CD Baby to distribute your music has already found a home in Amazon Music Unlimited, where you'll be paid every time someone listens to one of your songs. In addition, your music will continue to be considered for Prime Music and their curated playlists. So how does Amazon Music Unlimited differ from competitors like Spotify and Apple Music? First, price. Music on Amazon Music Unlimited, which boasts a catalog of tens of millions of tracks, can be accessed for only $7.99 a month by Amazon Prime members. It's $9.99 a month for non-members, and just $3.99 a month for owners of Amazon's Echo, though that's only good for one Echo device at a time. Second, seamless integration with Echo. The device's voice-activated assistant, Alexa, can, of course, cue specific requests by song, artist, album, or playlist, but she can also find the latest song from an artist, serve up songs based on mood, choose music by year or decade, and much more. All your fans can now just ask Alexa to pull up your music catalog. The latest estimates suggest Amazon has more than 60 million Prime members worldwide, while its online storefront carries more than 300 million registered customer accounts with associated credit card details. Amazon Music Unlimited is currently just available in the U.S., but will be available for customers in the U.K., Germany, and Austria by the end of 2016. The RIAA released their sales data for the first half of 2016. In their report, they showed that music streaming revenues totaled $1.6 billion, up a good 57% over last year. Music streaming revenues accounted for 47% of industry revenues compared to just 32% over 2015. Revenues from subscription services like Apple Music, Tidal, Spotify Premium, and others are included in this category. Paid subscriptions to streaming services also grew this year, accounting for 30% of industry revenues. Paid subscriptions actually grew 101% to average 18.3 million compared to just 9.1 in 2005 and 7.9 in 2004. What's even more surprising is that revenue from paid subscriptions dwarfs that of digital downloads. Last year, permanent song downloads account for barely a little over half of all digital music revenues. This year, however, revenue from streaming has overshadowed revenue from digital downloads, with revenue from ringtones and ringbacks having slowed to a trickle. So that's the news. Still lots of streaming news.
Yeah, I was thinking this news segment confirms pretty much what we've talked about for the last like five episodes, that we are in a streaming world.
Yeah, downloads on the decline big time, streaming doing what people thought would never be possible, and it generating more revenue than what downloads are doing and growing considerably. And I didn't have time to read through it all, but my boss here at CD Baby sent me several reports that were very detailed, lots of numbers. They didn't have enough pictures, so I didn't read it yet. And it was painting a very positive light of where we're headed in the music business. So a lot of people going, hey, wait a minute, this might actually work out like people said it would work out. So interesting things happening.
Yeah, one of the, going back to the conference, one of the sessions I attended, which I really loved, was Charles Alexander, who's a kind of Spotify playlist promoter, I guess you could say is his position. But so he gave this talk on how to get your music into more playlists on Spotify and, you know, sort of how to just boost your presence there. And at the end of his talk, he said, okay, now after all this, we're going to finally talk about money. So he gave it this example of an artist and said, you know, here's this woman I worked with. Her song got played, you know, X million times. How much money do you think she made? And people in the audience were like, 6 cents, $10. Like, oh my God, like we're still living in this world where everyone thinks that you really can't make any money. And he said, well, let's set this record straight. She owns her own masters. She owns her own compositions. And so she made, you know, I forget what it was, but it was maybe $75,000 or something like that. And like the room was like, oh, like, I mean, I know we've been trying to sort of share this message that if you own all your rights, there's money to be made here, but
yeah,
it's still surprising.
I saw an article online this week that was talking about, you know, that independent artists make four times the amount of money a major label artist makes from streaming. And they basically broke it down that, you know, for every dollar generated from streaming, and it's really just every dollar in general, only the artist only gets 18.5% of that because there's all these other people keeping stuff from it. And so it's like, hey, you know, a lot of those people that you've been hearing complain about it are people that sign contracts that state that other people get to keep most of the money.
Right.
And so if you don't do that, you can actually make some money. So I think we're getting to a point where real economics are starting to come into play, where people are seeing, okay, it's not this. This is what will happen. We now have data. We can look at it. We can see what's happening. And I can say there's lots of artists here at CD Baby making some real money from streaming, and that, you know, for them, that's the majority of their business. So interesting stuff. Amazon finally launching their music service, I think, will be interesting because Amazon's been this sort of sleeping giant when it comes to media. If you aren't an Amazon Prime subscriber, which I am because my wife absolutely hates paying for shipping and we just order everything off Amazon. So it's free shipping. But they've, for a long time, they've had like a Netflix like program where you can log in and see lots of movies and TV shows. And they've had that with music as well, very limited catalog on the music side. But they, with this, you know, expansion into the music service, it's like they've got all these Prime members that get a really good deal. I mean, I was looking at that going, hey, maybe I should just switch to that and save a few bucks. I'm already paying for Prime. And then they've got so many users that, you know, 300 million users that buy from Amazon constantly. So it is a real opportunity to massively grow the music market and the streaming music market. And honestly, I've just tried it a little bit because it just came out this week and I downloaded it. The interface is superior to that of Apple Music, for sure. I'm not as well-versed in the interface of the Spotify mobile app because when I'm using Spotify, it's usually on my computer here at work. But I cannot stand Apple Music's interface where I practically have to wreck my car every time I try to skip a song or find a song.
Right.
This interface...
Or God forbid, you're listening to a song on a playlist and you want to find the album that it comes from.
Yeah, exactly. That is like, how on earth could you make something that disjointed? Anyway, this Amazon one, they rolled out a nice product. And so with their new Alexa or an Alexa Echo players with that that's powered by Alexa... And, you know, their reach, consumer reach, they could be onto something here. They may suddenly become a very big player that really could take down some of the others. Not that I care if others exist, but, you know, I know that the guy that runs Amazon would like to take everyone down.
You're just reminding me of something that happened in the car the other day, which, not to dump on Apple Music too much, but I said, you know, I was talking to Siri and I said, can't remember the song, but I said, play such and such song by such and such artist on Apple Music. And I know for a fact that song is on it. And I had to re-say it like 5 times and it still kept saying, we don't know what you mean. Like play blah, blah, blah on Apple Music. I'm like, wait, you are Apple Music. You're Siri. Come on. Like, it was very frustrating. So I think Alexa might be a better listener.
Maybe so. All right. We've got a topic today. We're going to be talking about banned websites. It's been a while since we've talked about websites on the podcast. And I was being interviewed on a podcast yesterday and we were on this thread and websites came up and we started talking about some stuff. And I was like, yeah, these are some things we haven't talked about in a while on our podcast. And it's a perfect time to have an episode about banned websites because right now at hostbaby.com, hostbabies is CD Baby's web hosting for musicians. So if you need a website, you can go get a professional looking website and have it up and running in a few minutes. But right now for the month of October at HostBaby, you can sign up. And if you pay for a year of hosting, you get a huge discount for it, but you also get unlimited music distribution for the whole year. It's actually 13 months that you get. It's $199. You get 13 months of hosting and you get unlimited CD Baby music distribution for those 13 months. So you can put out as many tracks as you please for that whole time. So it's a great deal. So if you want to check that out, just go to hostbaby.com/October Madness and you will find out about that deal. But it's heading into that time of year where, you know, lots of people are starting to look for presents and gifts and Christmas and all sorts of holiday stuff happening. It's time to get your website in shape. You've got to have a good website. That's your face. That's your promotion portal to the world.
And I don't even think it's, you know, demeaning to artists to say that, you know, that you are serious or that you're not, because we live in this world where perceptions mean a lot. And so, you know, even if you're not a pro musician yet, or, you know, even if you're a new band, but you have this great website, that can be enough to make people take you seriously and want to come to your show or check out your music or, you know, whatever it is that you need them to do. Having a really pro web presence can make a huge difference in just making people take you seriously.
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about yesterday on the podcast that I was on. And we started talking about some specific things, like they were asking me some specifics. And I'm like, you know, we haven't talked about this in a while. And it is one of those things that a website says a bunch. And also, I think some things have shifted recently in the past year or so as we are moving into this streaming world, because you know, there was this time period where it's like, oh, well, I'll just send my fans to my Facebook page or whatever. And that worked for a few years. But you know what? I was thinking about it and I cannot remember the last time I saw a post by a page come down my feed. It hasn't happened. It doesn't happen unless it's been promoted. But I follow over the years, I'd followed a bunch of bands' pages on Facebook. I've never seen their posts. It's been like a year. And I know we talked about on the podcast how Facebook had changed that stuff. So if you're putting all your efforts into Facebook, you're wasting your time because no one's seen it unless you're promoting it and paying for it because they are not showing pages to average users. And so that more so than ever, it's like people were going to social networks. Social networks are starting to, filter what people see. And if you're not willing to pay, a lot of times your content's not being shown or shown as much as you think. That's why it's important to build out a hub on the internet that you control, you can decide what people see, and that you point your fans back to that, and it's kind of the gateway to your musical career, your musical business. And so we've got 12 tips for a better band website, and a lot of these are great, quick tune-ups and some things that you can do as we head into that busy season to make sure that you're not, missing out on some fan connections and some sales.
Let's do it.
I'm gonna take the top six, and then Chris, you're gonna take the other six.
Okay.
So, but we'll discuss about each one. But so number one is get rid of distractions. Kill autoplay on videos and music. And if you've got pop-ups like email sign-up forms, make sure they're functioning properly and not constantly barraging your visitors. People want to feel comfortable and not overwhelmed. Very important.
Yeah, and with a pop-up, those things are usually very easily customized so that, you can set the time after which someone who's visited your site won't see it again. Say it's 30 days or whatever. You set it so that it's not popping up for someone who's checking your site regularly.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I would note for, get rid of the distractions, I would say look at your website on a tablet, on a desktop, and on a mobile device, because sometimes something that looks like it's functioning or not annoying on a desktop might be really irritating on a mobile device. So it's good to check out both of those, all those different ways people could be viewing your site. But yeah, when people land on your site, they don't need 1,000 things flashing in their face. So, there are some tools that you can use to do some marketing and grab fans' emails, but, do it tastefully, minimally, and autoplay is the worst, especially in mobile. When you get some of these situations where stuff is autoplaying, you can't even find where the thing is, and then you just got to leave, especially if you land on their website and you're somewhere where you really didn't want people to know you're surfing the web, and suddenly the song's blasting.
Like in the middle of a symphony orchestra concert?
Or at church, or at work, in a meeting. Those places where your phone might just happen to start surfing the web. That's. So yeah, get rid of the distractions. All right, number two, tell people what to do. Your site should be easily navigable so visitors can find what they want. But by highlighting certain elements, you can increase engagement and gather info and encourage visitors to spend a little time on your pages. Yeah, so when you get people to your website, is it obvious what they can do? Depending on the kind of site you have and the kind of content you have, those can be different things. But just kind of take a step back and think about somebody who maybe saw you play last night, what they're seeing when they get to your website. Do they know what to do? And if not, or is it obvious what options they have of things they can look for, you might want to spend some time thinking about it.
Yeah, and I think it's important to prioritize it for yourself. Are you in the middle of a Pledge Music campaign? Well, maybe the most important thing is, pre-order your CD through Pledge Music, or, contribute to your Kickstarter. Whatever's most important to you, make sure that is prominent and totally clear. And then, maybe it's, once that's over, you move up the email sign up form or something. You kind of just got to think about how to structure your site based on what's most important and then make sure you have a clear call to action so your fans aren't confused.
Yeah, especially, these things tend to have seasons and are cyclical. Like you said, you might have a campaign going, like a Pledge Music campaign or a Kickstarter campaign, or you might be on a tour. You might have a new album release that's just come out, or you might have something. make sure that those things are obvious or the things that you want people to pay attention to. All right, number three, make sure your site is optimized for mobile. And I mentioned this slightly, but go to all your pages on a mobile device, go to all of them on a tablet and on a desktop and see how they look and react. And, you know, they could be different. And it may be that the difference is not based on like, oh, I don't, this site is broken. It could be that, oh, the way I used this image or I put this content here, it looks fine on a desktop, but I may have to rework it a little so it looks better for mobile. This is, you know, with email, this is something to consider with when you're sending emails to your fans and the links you have them go to. There might be a page on your site, maybe it's the homepage, or maybe there's a music page or something, where if you're emailing about it on a mobile device where most people are checking their email first, maybe it's better for you to send them to a different page than the homepage because that page looks better for mobile and it's better organized and my whole music catalog's there. That's okay. You don't always have to send people just to the homepage. If it's like, hey, check out my music at my website, send them right to that mobile-optimized music page and they'll be more likely to click around and stick around.
That's a good point.
Number four.
Oh, did you already mention, though, that HostBaby sites are responsive in such a way?
Yeah, if you're using HostBaby to power your website, yes, they are mobile responsive, and there's some great templates. There's a music page. There's a whole lot of really cool features. My favorite two features are the Instagram feed, and you can create entire video pages out of playlists from YouTube. So you just drop in the playlist URL and then it populates the page in a really nice way. And the thing I like about that is that if you're promoting some videos and you're somebody that does a lot of video content, then you can go and you just send them, instead of sending them to YouTube where there's no chance of them giving you their email address and there's no chance that they're going to buy a t-shirt or stream extra songs or buy some CDs or download some music at YouTube, you can send all that traffic to this video optimized page, and then your fans are actually on your turf and not YouTube's turf. So those two features I really like because it just helps keep the website looking vibrant with some of the cool social tools that are out there. So number four, ask for their email. This is so important. You need to be building an email list. I don't care what you've been told about email. Most people, I think, have gotten over the email is dead thing and realized, oh, email is actually incredibly powerful, and Twitter and Facebook are barely even showing my fans, if at all, what I'm posting. But you need to get email addresses. People still look at email as personal communication, and it's very powerful. Most of your conversions when you're marketing your stuff online will come from email. And so be sure you just take a look at your website. Is it obvious where people can join my email list? If not, let's do something about it.
Yeah, and I think an interesting point about that, which you had mentioned before about how Facebook is really not showing posts from pages all that often. Like if I post something from my music page on Facebook, you know, I might get a handful of likes just sort of organically without me boosting anything, but they're always from the same group of maybe, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 fans. Like, you know, the handful that's liking and engaging with my stuff on Facebook organically is always from that same group. When I send an email, you know, depending on the topic and what interests different, you know, members of my fan base, I'll get a bunch of, not a ton, but in some responses back by email, and they're always different people every time. I think that's so cool. I'm like, you know, it's kind of like re-sparking a connection between you and this person maybe you haven't heard from in a year, but by email I'm reaching them. By Facebook I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next up, number five, simplify your navigation. There's no need to have 20 pages on a banned website. If you've got more than eight items in your navigation bar, you might want to think about condensing some things down. It's really, you know, you can make sub pages if there's related content, but you really shouldn't have this overbloated navigation. So take a look at that. What do you have on there? Are you giving people so many choices that it's just paralyzing and that they don't choose anything? or what are some ways that you can condense some information? You don't need an about page and a bio page and a photo page that only has one photo of you. Figure out how to better create navigation that sort of conveys the story of who you are and brings people into the music. And, you know, you can try different things. You can change this stuff instantaneously. So there's no reason why you can't try it, you know, send out some emails, see if you get more activity on your music page or your merch page. And if that didn't work, well, let's try and string it together a different way. So, but don't have, you know, I've been to a website recently where there was like 15 navigation items. I don't even know what I would find on those pages. And the navigation looks all broken, and just don't do that. Just simplify. All right, number 6. Double check your contact info. We probably should have made this one number 1.
Cuz it's so easy to fix and so often wrong.
Yeah, it's crazy. The funny thing was is I've made many of these mistakes myself. I was trying to get Small Town Poets verified around the AMP account for Pandora. That's what it was. And you had to email them from the band email address and that was stated on your website. And so I thought I was doing that, and they rejected me. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? This is the right one. And then I looked and I was like, oh, no, I'm wrong. This is not what I had on the website. I had the wrong information on the website. We had changed it. And so it was just one of those things where I felt kind of stupid afterwards. But yes, double check your contact info because it may not be saying what you think it's saying.
Yeah, and one thing, I think the contact that I currently have on my site is an email that I check less frequently than kind of my main email that I have for personal stuff. So the problem I always have is like, it might be 4 or 5 days before I see an email that's come in. And then, you know, if it's an interview request or something, you might have just blown that opportunity. So don't do what I'm doing. Make your contact something you're checking daily.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I think I'm up, right?
Yep, you're up. Take it away.
Feature upcoming events.
And this is number 7.
Number 7. Feature upcoming events. So if you have a big show or a video premiere or, you know, really anything that's going on in your music life that's a happening, make sure you're featuring it prominently on the website and not just in your gig calendar, but, you know, maybe you create a banner that goes at the top of your site or a pop-up or a blog post or something like that. Just draw attention to it.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about when reading through this list and we were putting it together is how terrible a lot of major label artists are at a lot of these things. And some of it they can get away with because, as Tom Jackson likes to say, they're married to their audience. And their audience, a lot of times, will do all the extra work that they're asking in order for them to, you know, find out about stuff. But there's been multiple bands recently, major bands, that made some big announcement about a tour or people tell me they're coming to town. I go to their website and I can't find anything that tells me anything about recent news. Complete tour dates. It's just bizarre how even at that level people don't feature, you know, some major news or upcoming events, and it's frustrating. And, you know, I can't remember the artist it was, but it was somebody really big that I went to their website thinking, oh, maybe I'll go check out this tour, and I was like, what? I'm not going to go. Kind of,
and I wonder if at that level it's a case of like they have such a huge team. They probably have one person for social, you know, one person for Facebook, one person for their website. They've got their own booking agent, and they're all kind of not really talking to each other in real time. So,
yeah, I'm sure the intern forgot to update the website or something. I don't know. Yeah, it's right. Weird because I see that a lot, and the reason why it's come up is because, you know, since we do have a web hosting company here, a lot of times I will go look at a lot of the websites that major label artists are, the kind of content they're featuring, like what seems to be important, what are fans interacting with, and what are they not. And so I'll go on these hunts and like just look at a ton of just household name artists that come to mind as I'm sitting there. And more often than you would expect, there's broken stuff. There's just stuff that's, it doesn't tell you what's going on. You're like, this person's on a major world tour. Why can't I find out information about it right here? So yes, important feature upcoming events.
All right. So number 8, share full length streaming tracks. No one's stealing your music. No one is, you know, contrary to what some people still think of, you're not at risk if you put a whole song or 5 or 20 or 50 on your website for people to hear. As we said at the beginning of the show, we're in a streaming world, so they can either get it from Spotify or SoundCloud or the music player app that CD Baby has. You know, there's a lot of ways to feature your tracks, and you should be doing that because kind of, you know, hoarding it to yourself is not going to do you any good. So put a player on your site.
Yeah, and a link to places where people can get the rest of your catalog. You know, feature some tracks and then, you know, make it acknowledge the fact that, hey, some people use Spotify, some people use Apple Music, some people are going to be using Amazon Music Unlimited, and some people want to buy downloads, some people want to buy CDs. You know, you don't need to go overboard on every page that you're posting music, but give some music where people can hear it. You know, they want to hear it. That's what the expectation of fans is nowadays, that they're going to hear something. And then, you know, lead them on a path of where they can enjoy more.
Yeah. All right, so number 9, we have give something away. And the standard suggestion is an MP3 download. Although, honestly, I mean, I still do that on my site. I should probably change it to something more enticing. But, like, I don't want a download of your music. I don't. As we've discussed many times, like, managing files is frustrating. So, you know, maybe there's some other things you can offer, a PDF of a tour diary, or maybe it's suddenly if they sign up, you know, for something, then you get first access to concert tickets. Or, you know, there's dozens and dozens of options. But you just need to be giving your fans something when they get to your site.
Yeah, there's lots of things you can do, like, hey, maybe there's a special exclusive video. I think if you're doing MP3s, you know, the thing that would entice me, even though, you know, we've talked about the issues with MP3s being so challenging with especially iPhone users, I think the one thing that I would wrangle with is some cool live tracks, you know, something that if I felt like I was going to get access to some really cool live content from the night before. And it doesn't even have to be a download. Like, you could make it so, hey, they enter the email address and then they get access to a page that they wouldn't have had access to otherwise. And then, you know, you've got them listening to maybe some exclusive tracks and content. And to me, that's enticing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess exclusivity is the key, because if it's not exclusive, then what's keeping you from just going and listening to that same thing on Spotify or any other streaming service? So
that's why the idea of live tracks, because if it's like, we played this show last week and the response from the crowd and just the energy in the room, we've never experienced anything like it. Here's a live track. It's mind-blowing. I'm like, okay, you got me. Here's my email address.
My mind better be blown now.
Yeah, I better be blown, but you already have my email address anyway at that point. So,
All right, so let's see. Number 10, we have upload photos of your fans. And I like this one a lot because, for two reasons. You upload photos of your fans having a good time at your show, you're showing the whole world that you're worth listening to and worth, you know, your concerts are worth going to because there's something in it for them. They're going to have a good time too. But then the other cool thing is if your fans see themselves in those pictures, they're going to share them with their friends and social followers. And suddenly you're doing that whole grassroots word of mouth. I guess it's not really word of mouth, but the digital version of word of mouth, you know, spreading through fan enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where artists, big opportunity that most artists don't take advantage of. And this actually has, it's twofold because, you know, you mentioned fans see themselves and want to share, but it also makes you look more legitimate. When you're talking to club bookers and people trying to get people to take a chance on you, especially if you're a newer artist trying to get established, a couple good photos of you on stage with a decent crowd can really tell the story that, hey, one, these guys have played for a larger audience, so they can handle the stage. Two, that they probably have a following. So not only does it get your fans excited to share and tag themselves on social networks and stuff, but it also tells a story about you being a successful artist. And this is one of those things, I'm that guy in the band that's like trying to get photographers and videographers and everybody taking constant photos, especially now with small town poets that our performance opportunities are so limited just with our time and availability, that it's like you want to tell a story of the experience of the band. Even if it's just a couple shows, there's still a story to tell. And getting some good photos and putting them on your website can really set a cool vibe and just add depth to what you're presenting there.
Yeah, it's like what we talked about earlier, sort of managing perceptions in a way. Like, you might be able to sell out a venue in your hometown. Take bunch of pictures of it, because when you want to travel through Kansas and you can't sell out, you know, you can't even get anyone to pay attention to you because you don't have fans there, some, you know, talent buyer might see that picture and be like, oh, okay. You know, they've got an in now because they've created this impression that they're serious. So
photos help so much and just show that good things are happening. And that's why I like the Instagram integration that we have with HostBaby, because a lot of people are more apt to keep taking photos on Instagram and forget about their website. And it's an easy way for your normal activity to just fuel activity on your band website and keep it fresh and live looking. So someone goes to the photo page, it's not a concert you played 3 years ago being the most recent photo. It's like, hey, this is up to the minute of what we've been doing out there on tour or in the studio or just what we're doing in general. So I think it's good.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to the next one, which is number 11, post a quick update on your blog. You said the phrase, things are happening. So if someone shows up at your site and your last blog post was from 6 months ago or, you know, even 3 months ago, it sort of creates a stagnant feeling and the same effect that your Instagram feed has on your website, you know, of just showing that you're out there doing things. A quick blog post every week or two, you know, it doesn't have to be long. It could just be a picture and a couple sentences, but it shows that you're still alive, you're still engaged in music making and you know, it, I think, also creates an impression that someone should stick around and maybe investigate your site a little more.
Yeah, and I think this is one that a lot of artists struggle with, myself included, because it's like when there's not a lot going on, you feel like, what am I supposed to talk about? And I think one thing I'd say is don't look at this as your travel itinerary or there's only something to write if the band is on the road or in the studio and we're not doing either of those things. So what am I supposed to write there? Start looking at it as your opportunity to express your musical journey, your artistic vision, you know, things that you feel that you need to bring in, you know, to the story that are a part of you that may not be just about, hey, just an update, we're in the studio, hey, update, we're on the road, back in the studio, sitting at home doing nothing, you know. Just looking at it as that, hey, maybe there's an interesting book that you read recently that inspired a song. Write about that. You know, maybe you want to pick out one of your songs and write a story about it. It doesn't even have to be a new song. So there's a lot of things that you can do there just to keep content rolling and fresh. And, you know, you're conveying a story about your artistic journey, and it's more than just whether or not you're in a tour van or tour bus or in a recording studio.
Right. And I think there's also a blog allows you to repurpose almost any kind of content you're creating. It could just be a single Instagram photo that goes up on your blog. It could be if you create a Spotify playlist, like post about it on your blog. Like pretty much anything you're doing can be a blog post. You know, maybe it's not a great one, but
yeah,
just take the most interesting things and put them up there. All right, so number 12, describe your music, which everyone loves doing. So no one relishes describing their music, but it's important, and it makes things easy for journalists if they see that up at the top of your site. It makes it easy for fans to, or, you know, maybe not fans, but visitors to know whether they want to check it out, whether it's in their, ballpark. And so being able to describe your music really well in a sentence or two at most is super crucial.
Yeah, and we did a really cool exercise at the DIY Musician Conference in our podcast taping that may not have taped. Still needs to be verified.
Why?
it's just not meant to be. But anyway, we did a really cool exercise that if it didn't tape, we will do a podcast episode with the same information, because it really helped people build that description. I thought there were some really great ones that came up in that taping. And I think that's something that people can learn from and understand that, yeah, these long, self-indulgent descriptions about what you do are not interesting to people. They don't tell people what's unique about you, but find some interesting way to describe your music that's accessible and makes people want to listen, and it can really help you out a lot. Especially on a website, if someone lands there and they're trying to look for, do I identify with this person? Am I a part of this person's tribe? Do we fit together? And so some of those things, like describing your music, helps them, gives them cues as this, yes, you were in the right place. This is the kind of music you like, and this is who we are.
Yeah, and that exercise is obviously not only important for putting a description at the top of your website, but it could be your Twitter bio. It could be the first sentence of your press release. It could be the thing that you lead with when you're writing to club bookers. So it's worth doing no matter what the usage is, just so you have it.
Yep. So that was our 12 tips for a better band website. I think there's some good ones in there, and it's a lot that some of them seem obvious, but I see them overlooked all the time, and I'm guilty of it as well. So we're headed into that season where people are going to be online shopping, looking for stuff, getting new devices, so they're checking out new music. Make sure that when they come across your website that you have the house in order. And if you don't have a website, you can go to hostbaby.com and you can try it free for 30 days. And if you go to hostbaby.com/October Madness, you can find out about the $199 offer where you get 13 months of web hosting plus unlimited music distribution. Unlimited. You could release 100 albums over the next year and it'll all be free.
Yeah.
All
labels,
be free.
Take note.
No annual fees either, people. Who wants to pay annual fees and other store fees and stuff like that? But yeah, it's important that you represent yourself properly online, because the whole world is at your fingertips with your music, and they're going to find you by a website that conveys the message of who you are. So it's good to take care of that. Any final thoughts on band websites?
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about, we didn't talk about the URL itself, the name of your website, which maybe is not something you're going to change if you've already been using it for a while. But if you're just starting one, try to make it as simple as possible, you know, like yourband.com or yourband.rocks or whatever. Like, there's still so many bands that, like, I'm like, oh, that's cool, what's your website? And then they tell me and I'm like, I'm never going to remember that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if
I mean, there's always Google, of course, but like, you know, make it easy for us.
Yeah, you want to make it easy for people. And if you are running into an issue, which many people do, where there's either that URL's taken or there's other people using a similar name or the same name, you can always do yourbandnameofficial.com or yourbandnameband.com, or, you know, there's variations of that. So that's something to consider. There are .rocks and .band instead of .com, so you can go that route, or .net or .tv. Small Town Poets, we have smalltownpoets.tv because we've got somebody who's been squatting on our URL for years, and I have a feeling they're using it to send spam, because they're not even trying to sell it online. They just are squatting on a whole bunch of URLs that had the word small town in it. So the chances of us getting that back are probably zero. But yeah, think about that. Put some thought into it, because you want to be able to say it from stage. And the one thing that came up in that branding workshop that we did at the conference was someone was using a bunch of numbers instead of letters. And those things are confusing. If you're using like a 3 to represent an E, your fans are going to have a harder time finding you. If you're dropping all sorts of vowels, sometimes it can work, but just
particularly if you're a tech company.
Yeah, but just be careful and understand that, you know, if you're rewriting the English language, that means people are never going to find your website. They're going to get frustrated typing in. They're going to get frustrated Googling it, because if you change the name, the URL, to all these weird things, that sometimes Google will have a hard time finding it. So just think about those things. All right. We've got a phone call, so let's get to it.
Hey, guys. My name is Tori Knight, and I love the podcast. I've been listening to it I've just discovered it, and I've only been listening to it for a couple of weeks. And you have a lot of information on there, so please forgive me if you guys have already covered this question. I'm actually an award-winning musician out here in California, and have done a lot of things out here and played a lot of places and have been offered a record deal from different places. But just because I didn't want to sign over my stuff, meaning any rights or even masters and stuff, I never signed. I'm not looking to get rich from making music, so I didn't really care about that. I cared more about the art than like trying to get rich. I want to make money doing it, but trying to get rich. But anyway, I kind of switched gears musically. So I've been thinking about signing with this independent label that kind of deals with the kind of music I'm switching to, at least for a little bit, just doing a one record deal. But what I asked them is, do I get to keep the masters? And they said no. And so what I want to know is, what does that mean for me as the artist? Does that mean that they get to do whatever they want with my music whenever they want? Does that mean that if I need to, like if somebody wants to place my music in, like later on in a TV show or a commercial, I need to contact them? So I'm just trying to figure out, what exactly does that mean? And if I should sign this contract, I'm going to have a lawyer look at it, but right now everything else seems great. I'm just a little iffy on that part. And lastly, I think for record companies, I think that if record companies hadn't got greedy, they would still be around. Like, a record company is nothing without an artist. An artist can still be an artist without a record company, but if they're trying to make a living at it, they need the record company. So I just always felt like, if you're willing to go 50-50, that's what I would always say when a record company would come to me. I'm like, if you're willing to go 50-50, I'll sign. But if you want to go like 70-30, which I think was the typical thing back then, I was like, no, I'm not going to give you 70 and I take 30. So anyway, that's my thought. Again, I love the podcast. Thank you for doing what you're doing. It is amazing. I'm trying to catch up. There's a lot of stuff on your CD Baby iTunes, and I love it. And so I'm just listening to it while I'm working. So thanks again.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tori. And yes, you have described one of the major reasons why I do not recommend jumping into a label deal. And it's something that Small Town Poets, we had a major label deal back in the late 90s. It's still an issue for us. We do not own our master recordings. It's frustrating. When you do not own your master recordings, just like you were asking, you cannot do a sync deal without their permission. You can't do anything with those recordings because they own the recordings. It's their property. And it's a weird thing that as time goes on, you start feeling as an artist, especially if you're not the hot thing on that label anymore or you're not their focus of attention. You can't go exploit it yourself. You know, there are some more friendly options out there and deals that people are making. And there's some deals I've heard people making where you get the masters back after 5 years and so on. So there is,
I feel like that's, you know, I was talking with a friend actually yesterday about some smaller indie labels that, you know, we have friends in common that are either on or that are the label owners. And I feel like when you're like in that sort of smaller realm where, you know, maybe it's a 50-50 split, and the rights return to you after a certain amount of years, and you know the person so well that you know you can get a hold of them and, like, you know, convince them that this opportunity is good for your music. Like, I personally wouldn't be scared of those sorts of label deals. But if you're just one of a roster of 300 artists or even, you know, 50 artists, then suddenly there's that distance between you and what you can do with your music, which I think you're warning about.
Yeah, and that with Small Town Poets, you know, that it kind of became a situation when the band was starting to write and record and release music again. Our old catalog was really just in a closet somewhere. I mean, it was available on the download stores, but it's nothing was happening. There wasn't anything that we could do with those recordings. They're not ours. We couldn't, you know, what we're trying to do now is work with the label to do a 20th anniversary of our debut album and include a bunch of new tracks as well. But we can't do that without their permission. If they're not on board, those tracks are theirs. Bands have even done things like, I know Toad the Wet Sprocket did this, one of their bigger albums, the master recordings were locked up and the whoever at the label was not interested in doing anything with them. They went and re-recorded the entire album, and it sounds pretty similar. And they re-record it. So now they own those masters. Now they can do what they want. They can pitch those master recordings for sync placements. They can use them however they will because it's their property. You know, it sounds just like the original, but this version's their property. They paid for it. They recorded it. So it is something to be cautious about, and can cause problems later on down the road if, you know, somebody's just kind of tying up your catalog and it's just sitting there and you don't have the rights to exploit it in any way. I mean, the songs are different. So like the songs, you can go re-record those, and, you know, as long as you're paying the mechanical royalties like you should, then you're fine. But the master recordings, they're their property. So that was a good question. And thanks for the call, Tori. If you'd like to call our listener line, the number is 360-524-2209. And, you know, just try to keep your call within, you know, if you can get it under 2 minutes, that'd be great. Makes it easier to get it on the podcast. If you've got a website tip you want to share, I'd love to hear it. If you've got just a general question, those are welcome as well. And, or if you just want to say hi, we welcome that too. You can also email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or go to the podcast website and leave comments in the show notes section. Yeah.
If you think you have like the world's greatest music website, show us.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. If you're doing something cool that's really collecting a lot of fans, send us a link. I'd love to check it out and see what's working for you. Or if you have a question about your website, feel free to send us a link as well. And I think I forgot to mention when we were talking about the conference at the top of the show that the episode before this one is the keynote address that I did from the conference. So if you hadn't heard that, you can check that out.
So if I want to get teary-eyed twice again, I can go back.
Yeah.
And listen.
Yeah, you can. And so if you need a good cry, you can listen to it. But anyway, that's available. And we hope to be putting out some more of the content from the conference through the podcast feed and so forth. So, I think that's a wrap on this episode, unless you have something to add.
Happy weekend.
Yep, that's it. And we'll catch you next time on the podcast.
See ya.
Been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.